when I first started hearing the chants of F Joe Biden break out all over the place, I noticed there was a little bit of, I don't know, sophomore gleefulness among conservatives watching this type of thing. And all I could think about is how pathetic this was, that this is what the United States presidency has devolved on into. And then even when people are laughing now about, you know, the Let's Go Brandon, what does that say about what's happened to American media? It's American media has become a joke that everybody clearly hears F Joe Biden. People are wearing shirts and waving flags that say that. And then the media looks you right in the eye and says, oh, they're saying Let's Go Brandon.
Well, one member of the media did.
Nothing to see here. Move along. That is a metaphor for how the media has been for the last couple of years, where don't pay attention when your eyes and ears are telling you. We know the truth. This is how things really work. The virus didn't come from a lab. It really did come from the market right across the street. Yeah, exactly.
Classical gaslighting.
Yeah, well, yeah, if we want to use that word. And I was thinking, where does this all start? And I was thinking, going back to, for those old enough to remember, Bill Clinton. The presidency, when I was growing up, was something you aspired to be. If you, you know, you'd even hear about like a show like The Little Rascals. If you don't do what you're supposed to do, you'll never grow up to be president. And
haven't
then,
we taken that a little bit too far? The whole anybody can be president thing?
Absolutely. But think about, remember Bill Clinton being on the Arsenio Hall show?
Oh, yeah.
And he whips out his sunglasses and his saxophone and everybody's cheering. And that was like the beginning of the celebrity president. I mean, and then people are surprised years later we have a reality show TV star becomes president. It's like, well, you didn't see this coming.
You remember the question that the press asked him about boxers or briefs?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
right.
And that's a reflection there that we don't hold enough esteem for the office that we realize that that's not really appropriate.
Well, and what's interesting to me is that, like, when Reagan was running, oh, so we're going to have an actor for president? But that didn't flow into his presidency, you know, like going around and being on shows and trying to be a comedian and playing an instrument on show or whatever.
You do have an actor as president right now. I mean, Joe Biden is, Sleepy Joe is pretending to be president.
Well, yes, I think we've had a lot of actors for presidents.
I think he really thinks he's president, though. I mean, legally he is, but, you know, I mean, they keep him off now. They don't even bring him to the White House. They put him off on this set, which I don't know where that is.
Yeah, they have the flowers out in the middle of the winter, that kind of thing.
Well, it's off the recreation room from the nursing home.
Yeah, I'm like wondering at some point when Harris takes over as president, if they're just going to have him in some nice little room that looks like the Oval Office and give him crayons and stuff to keep going along with what he's doing. And we could sit here and laugh about how out of it Biden is, but this
it's
is
scary.
Yeah, this is serious stuff. That
it is scary.
Not only do we have somebody who's pretty much a puppet president, and if you question it, you have our mainstream media say, you're a conspiracy theorist. He knows exactly what's going on.
Wouldn't you love to be the leader of North Korea or China about now and just realize that for once I've got this window where I can do anything I want to do?
And that is why Taiwan will probably fall
right
within the next year, maybe by the end of this year.
But doesn't it say more about Americans than it does about Joe Biden? More pointedly, doesn't it say more about our legislators, our senators and our representatives that are watching this whole charade? Well, we can just call it what it is. It is a charade. But they're watching this whole thing and the decisions that are being made. And there's clear evidence that, you know, in some cases, he doesn't know what he's talking about. Perhaps the best example of that is all the time throughout his career, Joe Biden has quoted Thomas Jefferson, that the tree of liberty is watered with the blood of patriots and tyrants alike. And if you play the progression from when he first said it 20 years ago to when he was running for president, and if you play the last time he said it, which was during the mandate speech, he can't even get it out. And this is something that he's repeated over and over and over his whole career. And so now you have senators and representatives and a whole cabinet full of people, which, by the way, given this situation, the cabinet should be considering the 25th Amendment pretty closely right now. But none of them are bringing up the question of, well, do we really have a commander-in-chief that is in command of all of his faculties? And I think being the most generous I possibly could at this point is to say, I think he is not in command of all of his faculties. So doesn't it say a lot more about, you know, senators, representatives, the cabinet, that they're doing nothing than it is to what's actually happening?
Definitely says something about them. It says something about the press, too. You know, constitutionally, the press was supposed to exist to be a check and balance on the government. And we've seen exactly the opposite of that. It's been more like an accelerator pedal for insanity. It's the whole thing is a little bit like the old children's story, The Emperor's New Clothes. Everybody's standing out there watching this, knowing damn well that the guy's naked, and nobody's got enough courage to be the first one to say, hey, speaking of new clothes.
Speaking of new clothes. So I do have a story about that.
Okay.
So there's this event that's happening soon, and you know, I'm one of those people that I do like to dress up, and I don't go to a banquet without you know, a coat and tie on, or at least I try not to. And I haven't bought any new clothes for a while. But I've determined that corporations and the public in general do not want men to dress nice anymore. Here's why I say that. So I ordered a new shirt, a fantastic new shirt. It'll be here Thursday. I'm going to look smashing in it. And so I couldn't find that to buy around here. And then I thought, well, I've got a new shirt coming. So I need to buy a new suit because I do like suits. And so I drove to Sheridan and I went looking for a new suit. And of course, there's not a men's store here anymore. So I had to go to the Salvation Army. And it just so happens I did find a nice suit there, but not a new one. So now I have a new shirt and a new suit, but I don't have any shoes to go with it. So then I set about the task of finding a new pair of shoes in Sheridan. There's several stores around here that sells shoes. Do you think I could find one pair of men's dress shoes? Well, actually, I did find one pair, but only one pair, and they sucked. So now I've just determined that, you know, entire communities and all corporations just don't want men to dress nicely. They don't want a sharp-dressed man. You have to order everything off the internet now.
No ZZ Top?
Well, I mean, the whole time I've had ZZ Top playing in my head, but I certainly couldn't put it into practice.
Wouldn't it just be market demand in a small town like this? How many people are actually, you've got ranchers and oil workers and a lot of people work outdoors. Not a ton of demand for suit and ties in Sheridan, Wyoming.
Do you know how many lawyers you have in this town?
But they're Wyoming lawyers, and Wyoming lawyers are trying to not look the part, and so they're usually wearing cowboy gear.
I think even our politicians, when we have those debates, and maybe it's for like, you know, county commissioner or something like that, they all come out in the same uniform. They've got Wrangler jeans on and boots, and they might have a bandana on somewhere, and it's
right.
Right. That's like the Wyoming uniform.
A bolo tie. You can have a bolo tie.
Oh, yes.
Tie.
Oh, okay. All right. They have to have bolo ties. If you watch the legislature on YouTube, they all have bolo ties on.
Sorry, I'm not going that far.
Yeah, please don't, Ken.
Now, well, you're going to talk about finding clothes. For me, it's just finding a size. They assume if somebody's my height, I could, like, you know, fit a beach ball underneath the shirt, which I can't. So,
well, I mean, you're 12 feet tall or something. I mean, it's finding clothes has got to be a
chore. 6'9" weighs about 130 pounds.
But so here's my question, though. Like, you don't have any men's stores to speak of, right? So my question is, doesn't that tell us something about you know, how far our culture has come or has changed?
Oh, yeah.
You know, 30, 40 years ago, it was nothing to see men and women walking up and down the street dressed pretty nice.
Men wore hats. They all wore black ties and white shirts.
Yeah, coats.
Oh, yeah, when I was a kid, when you got on an airplane, you put on nice clothes to go onto an airplane. You didn't go in your pajama pants and Crocs.
My grandmother would get up and spend an hour getting ready to go to town to buy a quart of milk.
Right, and now you walk up and down the street, and you'd be hard pressed to find anybody that was wearing a coat and tie, much less somebody that wore that just for, you know, going to church or something.
You know that until about a year ago, there was a men's shop here in town that had been open for
it was fantastic,
probably
I loved that store.
40 or 50 years at least, and the purveyor of that, who I think was third generation proprietor. You know where he is now?
Bermuda?
No. He abandoned that business to go into the business of city councilman. That's what Sean Day did.
Does he wear a coat and tie?
No.
Not to the city council, I don't believe.
Well, I've seen some city councils recently that don't deserve to have people wear coat and ties to them.
Here we go.
That's what you really wanted to say.
Well, now that you speak of it, yes.
Are we dizzy yet?
Well, you know, you told me to get into the spirit of this whole rambling business, yes. So I'm trying.
Yes, you have to go back and look at that Emperor's New Clothes thing and say, man, if that isn't...
Well, it's appropriate.
A segue. There's a segue opening, much to Tom's dismay, because I think he wanted to add something to our initial discussion.
You know, where we started this discussion is we're being told that things are something that they're not.
The gaslighting.
We have a president that we're told is in command of all of his faculties when it's very clear if you listen to him talk, he's not. You know, we're being told that there was no fraud in the election, that nothing to see here. You know, move along. We're being told that our economy is booming right along, which anyone who goes to a grocery store anywhere can tell you that prices have risen dramatically, that there's incredible amounts of inflation.
Not just that, but the shelves are half empty.
Yeah,
and the reason for both of those, we've been told by an authority, is that the Biden taking us out of the recession has been so strong that people are buying so much, the shelves are empty, and inflation is caused by increased demand.
Yes, yes, always. Mm. It's always been increased demand. Well, actually, you know what, Ken, that's true. The increased demand is the demand for more paper dollars. And so they just hit the old print button.
When that fails, then you get out your stash of precious metals and you just start printing coins that say $1 trillion on them.
I was just thinking of that. We just mint a $1 trillion coin. It's ridiculous.
Where do things go, though? When you talked about, like, media saying stuff like there was no fraud in the election, and we have media walking lockstep that it's nothing but lies and conspiracy theories to say there was any fraud. Meanwhile, stories keep popping up on local news that never make national news about people getting arrested here and there for fake ballots, filling out absentee ballots at nursing homes, dead people voting. There's a lot of evidence out there of voter fraud, but there always is voter fraud. But this is what gets me. There was a poll recently where 56% of Americans believe the results of the election was tainted by cheating.
56%.
32%, 1 in 3 Democrats now says, yeah, there was cheating going on. Despite lockstep media telling everybody there's nothing to see here, move along, conspiracy theory, it was the most secure election ever.
I think that's deliberate. I think that there's a nefarious effort out there. Call me a conspiracy theorist, if you will, and I don't know that it's a human conspiracy, but that conspiracy or that effort is to undermine the confidence that people have in the system, in the American ideal of self-governance. And we're going to see this turnaround, just as Ben Franklin said, you've got a great thing going here if you can keep it. The only way to get rid of that, the only way to destroy it, is to destroy the average person's confidence in the American ideal of self-governance. And so, that's what's happening.
So that we demand something else?
Yeah. We want a king, just like Israel did. We want to be like everybody else.
Well, there was an interesting story on Glenn Beck's program this week. I'm not exactly sure if it was Thursday or Friday. But he was talking about this, that by and large, Americans have lost faith in the media, right? Like we don't have the Walter Cronkite type media anymore. And even then we could make a couple comments whether that was credible or not.
At least he gave some pretense.
Sure. But if you look at Fox News, okay, for a very long time, Fox News was the most popular news program in the country. I mean, well above CNN or MSNBC or PMSNBC or whatever you want to call those people. But even Fox News' viewership has dropped by 46% from its height. And so what you're seeing is a lot of alternative media sources like podcasts crop up. Well, the number one podcast in the country right now, and probably in the world, is Joe Rogan's podcast.
Yeah.
Okay. So if anybody heard that story this week, where I think it was CNN accused him of taking horse dewormer, which that's ivermectin. Honestly, it's the same stuff for humans. It's just prescribed differently.
Right. And has been for years. And one of
Right. But where the controversy erupted is not when CNN said, oh, he's taken horse dewormer. He's a conspiracy theorist. The controversy erupted is when Joe Rogan got back on his program and said, this is what CNN said. Mm-hmm. And then the thing went kaboom. So you're seeing an increase in viewership and listenership of alternative media sources because people, quite frankly, don't trust the big media sources. They don't trust newspapers anymore. I mean, I've got an article right here in front of me from the Red Star that's completely bogus about the special session. You know, so I think where we go from here is independent media sources, podcasts, different sorts of those things. And I really think that the big name media sources are just going to go downhill because people are diverting their attention to sources they think they can trust.
Have you tried to watch cable news in recent years?
No.
I find it very difficult now.
Whether it's CNN or Fox, I can't do it anymore.
I can't do it.
It's not news. It doesn't matter what your political stripe is. It's absolute garbage. It's sensationalism.
Yeah.
Whether it's Fox, whether it's CNN, they run with some bogus narrative, and then they bring on some experts who corroborate the bogus narrative, and then you get these people looking at each other in America saying, what world do you live in? I'm educated. I watch the news. I'm well informed. And they're coming from completely different... And I can't watch it unless I'm watching it for laughs when it comes in. But what do you do then? You said podcasts, independent sources. There are increasingly bogus podcasts.
Yes,
there are actual conspiracy theorists. Mm-hmm. You get crazy right-wingers, crazy left-wingers out there. Where do you get a reliable source of information at this point? And I find myself doing nothing more than having to dive through every news source I can find, whether it's right-wing, left-wing, American. I'm reading Russian, Chinese, anything I could find to get every perspective I can and see which facts corroborate what to figure out what the truth is. That's exhausting.
It's a lot harder than sitting down for a half hour watching Walter Cronkite.
But I think the solution to that, and maybe this is an answer to your question, Tom, is that you have to be able to prove what you're saying is the truth. Okay, so what I do on my program is any article that I bring up, any source that I bring up, unless, of course, it's pretty well known, and I can just say, well, on Glenn Beck's program yesterday in the second hour, he said this. But what I do is any articles like this BS one from the Red Star, I put a link to it on my website, and I tell everybody, okay, don't believe me. Go do your own research.
Yeah.
You know, all the articles are there. You can pull them up. You can read it for yourself so you know what I'm saying is the truth. And I think that...
Educate yourself.
Yeah, educate yourself. Exactly right. Like I should have been doing the last 40 years, Sleepy Joe.
Yeah.
But anyway, I think that people that start podcasts like Cowboy State Politics or The Ramble Room, we just have to prove to people that what we're saying is the truth. And the way that you do that is you build on your credibility. Here are the sources that I used. Tom, you're a college professor. You know, when your students write a paper for you, they have to cite their material, right?
Absolutely.
Right. So you know that where they're getting their information from is credible. And I think this is probably the most, like, one of the most important parts of it. And let me just ask the group here. When's the last time you heard anyone on one of these major TV news networks correct themselves?
Oh, yeah. That's even when they issue a so-called correction, it's usually we were really right, but, or something like
exactly.
They were chanting, let's go, Brandon.
Exactly. It's let's go, Brandon, right? So in order for these new podcasts and to build credibility is they have to be able to say, you know what? I was wrong about that story. You know, I read some more sources. Here's what I found. And that's how you build credibility with your audience. And that's the thing that's lost with all of these, big networks.
You mentioned Glenn Beck. And one of the things I appreciate about what he's done, he's not one of my favorite people. And if you go and say, my source is Glenn Beck, a lot of people are going to look at you sideways. Because there was a time when he kind of got a little out there. But what he did was he created a thing called Blaze TV. And it is a network of people, all kinds of different backgrounds and ways of presenting material. And they work together in a loose coalition. They support each other's shows. Collectively, they have, you know, you go to Blaze TV, you can thumb through any number of shows. And as you watch those shows, you see people that you see that, you know, that this guy's got his own show. Chad Prather shows up on three or four of them. All of this trading of talent in a way. And I guess when I started the concept of Cross Creek Media, that was one of my goals, was to have a network of different people with different approaches support each other, work together to try to make a popular outlet, specifically in our case, dealing more with Wyoming news than necessarily with national, although you can't separate the two. They're so intermingled. So that's why, for those of you that are listening, David Iverson has come on our show here at the Ramble Room and vice versa. And that's why Tom's here now, because he's had a desire for quite some time to get into this crazy business. And I can't wait till you have a show.
Yeah, we'll definitely get that going. That came from a demand from kind of what we were talking about before. Just Facebook is a place I go to just air thoughts out. And it turns out I end up having like hundreds of people I don't even know following me to hear what I have to say, and people coming to me saying, you know, I try and watch the news, I don't know what to believe anymore, coming to me with stuff, whether it's about COVID, the election, and saying, what's really going on with this? You know, Fox says this, and New York Times says that. Everyone's contradicting each other. What's the truth? So I've had people ask me, please do a podcast to bring this stuff out. And it was actually brought up by the university, somebody I work with there who wanted me to come out, because I've got a specialty of just eviscerating narratives, whether it's right wing or left wing or whatever, just coming out, their whole idea that this is what you're being presented with right now. Here are the facts that don't exactly go along with that narrative. So yeah, I'd love to continue doing that. One of the things that concerns me is we go back to, we were talking about what happened with American media and the celebrity president and Let's Go Brandon, and how everything's become a big joke in the federal government. How many Americans really have time to just slow down and listen to these things? How many people just scroll through now? They've got their curated news on Apple News and Google News, and it's all carefully orchestrated through those algorithms so they get the narrative they're supposed to be getting. They don't even read the stories. They just read through the headlines.
Yeah.
How do you combat that when you have people who are just lazily looking through their phones and really, and that, whether they want to admit it or not, that is forming their worldview?
You have to follow, I think, you have to follow Paul Harvey's lead and share the rest of the story. Now, there are many of these stories that everybody just kind of accepts the normal view, and then somebody comes along and disrupts that. And one good example is this whole story about Let's Go Brandon. That was such a flagrant step out of reality when that happened. And now if you go to iTunes right now, the number one song on iTunes is Let's Go Brandon. And it's pointing out to a whole audience that wouldn't have paid any attention of the flagrant disingenuousness of the news media. And I love it. It's waking people up.
The last frontier that unifies people right now is comedy. And now that's come under assault as being politically incorrect, to be whatever. You've got some older comedians. You got Dave Chappelle that come out there. And that was the thing of a comedian, to come out and make fun of everyone and everything. And now even that has come under. But comedy is the place to reach proverbially across the aisle to get people laughing together.
You're going to do a comedy podcast? Is that what you're telling me?
It, probably unintentional. Typically, when people laugh, I'm serious.
I'm all for it.
I'm not funny when I try to be funny. When I'm serious, people crack up. But.
Well, and it's on that point. We have people going back on, you know, for what people said 10 years ago, and accusing them of, well, 10 years ago you said this insensitive comment, therefore we have to fire you. And it doesn't matter what what format it took, whether it was Twitter or Facebook, or maybe you wrote a dirty email, or maybe you wrote a letter to a girlfriend you broke up with, and you know that's the reason why we're going to cancel them. But you don't see them looking back at older comedians. You know, if they think that the comedy that's coming out now is the most offensive and vulgar stuff they've ever heard, I have a couple guys to introduce them to. Richard Pryor, Robin Williams, Eddie Murphy.
If you go, Dr. Seuss.
Well, Dr. Seuss, yeah, terrible. We got to get rid of him. But the point is that if you listen to like older skits from Robin Williams, he's way worse than a lot of the stuff.
Go back to the 70s and listen to the Dean Martin roast.
Oh, yeah.
And you listen to the topics and the things, and it was all racist jokes about each other. And everybody at that point had an ability to take it on the chin and to dish it back out, and we just realized that it was all in good fun. I was thinking the other day, and David and I were just talking about this a little bit ago, a nation that has become so sensitive that we can't take a joke cannot survive in the real world. We have what we call first world problems. My refrigerator's broken, or all these other horrible things. You know, I can't. Today we were trying to do some technological things with Zoom and we lost our internet connection, and we're looking at each other like, this is so hard. Look at things historically. And what I was mentioning earlier to David is that's where we're headed. As this system begins to implode and fall into itself, all of these little first world problems are going to be replaced by genuine third world problems. And this people will not survive. They can't. They're just not tough enough.
To go back to the cult of cancel, I'll call them. This is something you've probably heard before. I'd have a little warning to anyone who says, well, yes, that language is absolutely unacceptable. And I don't care if it was 20 years ago. That shows that person really thinks blah, blah, blah. And these people are completely oblivious to the fact that today's accepted language is tomorrow's banned language.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
When I was growing up, my son has Down syndrome. If I refer to him as mentally retarded, which was the medical term when I was a kid, people freak out that I said the R word.
Yeah.
As if changing the word changes the condition. Whatever word they use now, what is it now? Developmentally delayed or whatever.
Can you even say that? You almost have to turn everything around positive, or he's
differently abled, or
yeah. Yeah.
Whatever you call it. I already know kids, whatever the correct term is now, will turn it into an insult because the condition doesn't change.
Right.
And then that word becomes banned. And then you'll have people saying, oh my, think about this. There are people now who say it is evil to own a pet.
Yeah.
It's terrible. Yeah. You know, the companion, owning a pet, you can't own. No, these are sentient beings. I mean, they have rights, and I know it sounds crazy now, but think about
bizarre.
Like 50 years from now, people like we have to erase Bill Clinton from the history books because he once owned a dog. You don't know what's going to be unacceptable in the future, and the way you're going now, it's pretty much I don't know what will be acceptable
next week.
It changes all the time. Yeah.
What
exactly
will be acceptable is perversion that was unspeakable 50 or 100 years ago.
Yeah,
it's kind of a flip.
Well, and that's an interesting point, too, because I remember when I was little, like, you know, a rated R movie was Ghostbusters. You know, and, you know, if you watched late night TV, even the late night comedy shows, which we were totally banned from watching, but you very rarely heard the F word or anybody, say the word bitch or...
Johnny Carson didn't swear.
Yeah, right. But now, you turn on network television at about 9 o'clock at night, you'd be lucky if you don't hear the F word, right? So it's interesting to me that you have, at the same time, you have language becoming acceptable that was in no way acceptable, 10, 20, 30 years ago. You know, we wouldn't swear on TV. Now, that's okay. But at the same time, we have all of this language that we're banning, right? That we're changing words because that word is offensive. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, you don't get it both ways. So it's almost like you're there's an attempt to control you through language, saying, well, you can't say anything offensive in any way, shape, or form, or we're going to cancel you. But at the same time, we want you to listen to everything that's offensive. So I don't know if it's an attempt to desensitize you on that
you,
end. Or...
You guys are up on the issue with, we'll come back to that. You guys are up on the issue about the books they're finding in some of the libraries.
Oh, boy.
For grade school kids.
Yeah. You've not been listening to the program, Ken.
Actually, I have. That's why I throw this out there. That's what I'm talking about, is these ideas of perversion that you would be unspeakable by my grandparents have now become, not only do you not speak against it, but you must celebrate it and you must forward these concepts. We're just flipping around. Did I steal your thought away?
Well, you're saying, you're talking about like saying perversion, right? This is like how I went from becoming a left-wing liberal to a right-wing conservative without moving.
Yeah, the whole world revolved
around. When I was growing up, I always figured people's personal lives were their personal lives. It was none of my business. And when people were actively criticizing or beating people up for living different lifestyles, I was a person saying, leave that person alone. He could do whatever he wants. He could date whoever he wants. None of your business. I still hold that view. And now I'm a crazy right-winger because I'm not out there with a flag marching and celebrating. And somebody will ask you, well, you know, what's your orientation? I'm straight. They're like, well, why? Are you a bigot? No. I'm surprised I even have to answer the question now. But what you're talking about, it's almost a form of manipulation. Now, I've had a lot of experience working with people who've had emotional disabilities. Severe emotional trauma, whether it's been vets with PTSD or teenagers with severe emotional disabilities. And many of them have been, particularly the teens, have been subjected to incredibly manipulative and abusive relationships. And the technique was never let the victim know what's okay. Always keep them off guard. Keep changing the rules on them. They jump in from one foot to the other, and eventually they get quiet. They never say anything. Because it's always afraid of being the wrong thing. And that's what we're getting into now. We're getting the populace in general afraid to speak out because you don't want to be canceled. You don't want to be labeled a bigot. I think the new one now is white supremacist. I mean, if you do something like correct somebody and tell them, no, 2 + 2 is not, it's not Jupiter, it's 4. And they'll tell you, well, that's white supremacist thought, that math is correct. Being on time for work is white supremacy. Free markets is white supremacy. And nobody wants to be a white supremacist. But they're even telling black people now that they've internalized white supremacy if they hold to traditional American values such as family, free markets, free speech, those types of things. So it's just a rambling way right there of just saying that that's what you're looking at right now. It's to subdue the American public. So they just shut up and do what they're told. Put on your mask and get your shot.
That's that nefarious idea that I was talking about. Let's destroy this idea that these people are capable of self-governance, because if you're afraid to speak up, if you're not going to be able to take advantage of your First Amendment right, then of course you can't govern yourself.
But the other part of that is that we're going to make it so that you don't know how to speak up, because I think part of that, like the swearing on TV and things like that, that's a way of communicating emotion. It's a verbal emoji. So I don't have a word right here, so I'm going to throw a happy face at you or a sad face or one of those, you know, you have like 150 different facial expressions on your little guy that used to just be a smiley face. But I don't have any vocabulary, so I'm just going to throw one of those at you. And then we'll give you a little bit more. We're all going to start thinking in memes, and it has to fit in this box on Facebook so that you have a thought. But here's how many thoughts you can have, and here's how long they can be. And if you go past that with a lot of people, they're going, what? So it's not just, we're not going to let you talk. It's that we're going to make sure you don't actually know how to express a thought. And when you stop being able to express a thought, you stop being able to have them because you don't have any words.
George Orwell.
Yes.
Well, I think that's an excellent point, Diane, is that, you know, people have lost the ability to think critically. And, you know, I can't remember who I was talking to the other day, but we were discussing an article that came out, and I don't remember which ridiculous news source it was in Wyoming, but I'm like, well, if you read that critically, you know, ask the questions, well, why do they say that that's true? Is that true? You know, what are the underlying assumptions that are undergirding that thought? But people don't do that anymore. You know, it's like Diane just said, you know, we have to think in terms of emojis, and we don't question things. We don't think critically about anything. You know, I'm going to do a show tomorrow about our county, another one about our county commissioner. If you didn't know, he just pled guilty to driving blackout drunk on the wrong side of the interstate from Sheridan to Buffalo, Wyoming, while eluding police with an open container. Just had to get that one in there. But now in the show,
who hasn't done that?
Yeah, yeah. About the only thing he didn't do was send an offensive email. But anyway,
Sorry, Troy.
During my show, I said, you know, and he didn't even issue an apology, which is absolutely true. But what I neglected to point out is that he did issue a statement. Now, in the statement, he didn't say, "I apologize." He said, "I'm so sorry." And if you read his statement critically, nowhere in there does he say, "I'm sorry for what I did." What you can infer from it is, "I'm sorry I got caught." But see, you don't get to that conclusion unless you ask the critical questions. And that's one thing that we're not doing of the media. Well, why did that lady say, "Let's go, Brandon"? Well, it was a CYA for her network because they didn't want 60,000 people in a NASCAR stadium shouting F Joe Biden. That's what it was. Mm-hmm. But we've really, as a culture, we've really got to start asking those critical questions.
We can't.
No, it has to fit in the emoji box.
Not just that, but we don't know how to think. You said thinking critically. First, mm-hmm. you have to be able to think. And if you've been run through the public school system and your parents were and your grandparents were, you don't even know what that means.
There was an expression that drill sergeants used to use because people, when caught at doing something wrong or failing in any way, their instinctive thing is to say, "I'm sorry." So the pat answer from a drill sergeant was, "We know you're sorry. What we want is an apology."
Exactly.
And maybe we need to say that for this conversation.
No.
Hey, you said ramble. That's what I've been doing.
Yeah, we rambled in all sorts of different directions.
We did. Thank you all for being here.
Thanks a lot for having me, Ken.